The race is on for the Republican presidential nomination. Welcome to Delmarva Today. This is Don Rush. Mitt Romney, Rick Santorum, and Ron Paul took the top-tier positions coming to the Iowa caucuses, with Newt Gingrich, Rick Perry, and John Huntsman still in the pack. Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann became the first casualty of the caucus results with her decision to drop out of the race. So is Romney inevitable? Can Rick Santorum stage an upset? And how does Ron Paul play in the party? And perhaps most importantly, what do these three, with their particular constituencies, mean for the Republican Party? In studio is Salisbury University professor Michael Laufen. He puts on his analyst hat for the assessing results. And in addition, by telephone from Washington, D.C., we have Will Marshall. He's president of the Progressive Policy Institute. Welcome to you all. And Will, I want to start with you because we have some interesting news, actually, for both of you. The unemployment rate fell actually by 0.1% to 8.5% this morning, as the economy added about an additional 200,000 jobs last month. And the hiring gains apparently cap rather a six-month stretch in the economy and generate 100,000 jobs or more each month. Also, the economy added for a total of 1.6 million jobs for last year, and the unemployment rate averaged about 8.9%. And that, of course, now is down from the 9.6% from the previous year. And economists are forecasting the job gains will top 2.1 million this year. Well, now you're in Washington, D.C. How do you think this news is being received by the Republican establishment? I mean, not only the Republican presidential candidates who are out and about today, and no doubt we'll probably hear something from them about this new number, but also Republicans in general. Is this the idea that perhaps the economy begins to pick up their greatest nightmare?
Well, they have an investment in bad economic news, in a sense, because that's their strongest card to play against the incumbent President Obama. But I don't think this is a big enough change to change calculations among the Republicans. If suddenly unemployment were to shoot down to, you know, drop down to 7% and then keep falling over the summer, you might see a change in the Republican message to back to deficits and attention to the big debts the country has racked up, in part to pay for, you know, the economic mess that Barack Obama inherited. So you could see that kind of shift, but I don't think this is going to be really affect their calculations, which again, you know, are that this is going to be an election about the economy and trying to hold Obama accountable for it. Whether that's fair or not is another question, but I think that's going to continue to be their main strategy.
I want to turn to Professor Michael Laufen. And so, Mike, what do you make of these latest figures, and what kind of political impact do you see it having?
Well, I would like to agree with Mr. Marshall that the electoral dynamics are, if the trend continues, can set in place a change in the public's perception. That's going to be key for what happens in the fall. That is to say, if the public's perception that the country is really turning, going into the right direction rather than the wrong direction, right way versus wrong way by the fall, then Obama's chances, as Don and I were talking about, he really turns out to be Irish. That is, he's the luck of the Irish will come his way, and that's going to be critical. Again, Don and I were also talking about the fact that George Bush, the first George Bush, essentially lost in part because even though the trend was going in the right way, the perception lagged behind, and that's going to be the key. And that'll be the campaign's job, is to try to persuade the public that the trend is in the right direction, and so the electoral prospects for Obama would improve.
Well, how important do you think that perception issue is? That if people think that the economy is improving, that perhaps the shift, there's a shift in the right direction, wrong direction polling, in terms of this election, because as Mike pointed out a moment ago, the election in terms of the economy and 1992 did not pick up enough in terms of perception, as opposed to, say, for instance, 1984 with Ronald Reagan, who saw a very deep recession, about 10% unemployment. By 1984, the economy was picking up. Obviously, the unemployment rate was lower than it is right now. Mm-hmm. But nonetheless, it was still high for the time, and people had this perception that, to use the Reagan phrase, it was morning in America.
Yeah, it was well, but you know, it was a different context. We had a fever to break. That fever was high inflation. And Reagan was very explicit that that's what we were doing, he and Volcker, the whole time. And so, you know, and then he started getting his his unemployment number falling a little earlier than has happened under Obama's watch. But I agree with what Michael said. The, you know, 70% or so of the Americans say the country is heading in the wrong direction. Fractional changes in unemployment figures aren't going to turn that around right away. He needs a steady drumbeat of good economic news for several months to change the general psychology. On the other hand, you know, people know that Barack Obama did not invent these economic problems. He inherited them. If there are signs that, you know, his remedies, although they've taken a long time, are finally beginning to come into play, or for whatever reasons we're beginning to turn corners, that's obviously going to take some of the heat off of him. The candidate, you know, that really is watching these numbers closely is Mitt Romney, because his whole campaign is predicated on his reputation as an economic manager. He's, you know, Republicans don't really love Mitt Romney. That's not, or at least conservative Republicans don't. That's not a big surprise. But they do think that he offers the antidote to Obama in the sense that he is a businessman with a strong record as a manager. And so his strongest card to play is, I can manage this economy that has proven to be too much for Barack Obama. So an improving psychology on the economy will, you know, will undercut his kind of, you know, argument. But I doubt that that'll happen in time to affect the outcome of this Republican nominating battle.
Mike?
I completely agree. And Romney's difficulty here is, if the economy does appear to be getting better and people's perception changes, he loses his ability to appeal as much to independent voters. Again, Romney has to have a strong appeal to independent voters in order to win the general election. Because his campaign folks have to be calculating that their appeal to the conservative wing of the Republican Party is not going to be robust. And therefore, the economic message must be compelling. This present news is not good news for Romney's prospects.
I want to turn now to the politics. And Will, I want to get your sense about where we are in terms of the Republican presidential nomination. We had this very close race in Iowa. Actually, there was some news that perhaps there might be a typo that might actually give the win to Rick Santorum. But be that as it may, it was only an 8-vote difference there. How do you see this playing out in terms of a New Hampshire, where obviously Romney is still doing well? Latest poll, still around 41%.
Right.
How do you assess where we are with this?
Well, I think Romney is must have some Irish in him too, because my reading was that he scored a big victory in Iowa, unambiguous. There's a lot of interpretation in Washington that purports to see this as a setback for him, but in the narrow terms of winning the Republican nomination, it's hard for me to interpret what happened in Iowa as anything other than a significant breakthrough for Romney. He won a race in a state where, you know, he never has polled above about 25%. That's pretty remarkable. He got lucky in his choice of a main challenger in Rick Santorum, a guy that doesn't have much money, a social conservative, doesn't really speak to the economic discontents that are so powerful out there in the electorate. Frankly, I just don't think he's as strong an opponent to Romney in a long race. I think a Southerner like Gingrich and or Perry, who has money, would have been stronger opponents for Romney. And then lastly, the third bit of great luck for Romney is the persistence in the race of Ron Paul, who you're not going to win anything, but seems to have 15% support almost everywhere, maybe a little under that in places like South Carolina. But, you know, it's enough to prevent an anybody-but-Romney coalition from forming that brings together the two main currents in the Republican Party, that is, the social conservatives who helped lift Santorum to second place or maybe a tie in Iowa, and the economic or libertarian-style conservatives that Ron Paul has sort of cornered the market on. So I've always thought that Romney's greatest threat comes from Gingrich, but he finished fourth in Iowa. So again, Romney was tremendously lucky and probably good in terms of the outcome. And Iowa goes into New Hampshire in a commanding position. And the only hope for Republicans who want to derail him will be in South Carolina. Can somebody beat them there? And, you know, and keep an eye on Gingrich because he's leading there still.
Let me ask you this, and both of you, there's a meeting that's supposed to take place in Texas of a series of social conservatives. James Dobson, he's the founder of Focus on the Family. Don Wildman, he's supporting Gingrich, but he's formerly with the American Family Association. Gary Bauer, former presidential candidate, and also meeting at the ranch of Paul and Nancy Pressler, who support Perry. And these people are coming together to see whether they can't find a consensus candidate. But nobody seems to be quite willing to step out of the race, as it were. How successful do you think this might be? Will, for you first.
Well, I don't think it'll be successful at all. Look, most of the people you just mentioned are all social conservatives, and if there's one thing that's kind of clear in this election cycle is that libertarian or economic conservatism is dominant. It's people's feelings about the bad economy, about big government, about taxes, about regulation, not abortion, gay marriage, and the things that motivate the social conservatives. So I just think, you know, I understand that they're very unhappy with Mitt. He's not their guy, never will be. He is basically a moderate from Massachusetts, as Gingrich says. But how do these self-appointed power brokers wrest the nomination from a guy that's got, you know, who's got one caucus under his belt and is soon to get New Hampshire under his belt? I don't see how that happens.
Michael?
Yeah, I think that it's pretty clear that organization and money will carry Romney through. I think there's no one else in the pack really can challenge Romney with regard to those two dimensions. And one has to give the Romney campaign some credit here, that through the super PAC, of course, which is not supposed to be coordinated with the campaign, they successfully eliminated Newt Gingrich, I think, from the competition. And so they're going forward. Again, it's remarkable, I think, in hindsight here, where the conservative, to the extent that the conservative wing of the party wanted to control the dynamics of this campaign and of the nomination, they have defeated themselves, in effect, because they have not been able to coalesce around one conservative challenger to Romney. They are going to be eliminated. And that'll be one of the deep ironies here, is that the conservative dynamic here that was supposed to be ascendant will have generated a moderate.
Well, we've had a situation, as Mike alludes to the super PACs. And for instance, in Iowa, the Restore Our Future, which is the mm-hmm. PAC that's aligned with Romney, they spent like $2.8 million, most of it against Gingrich, if not all. The Romney campaign, I guess, spent about $1.5 million. What kind of impact, then, do you see these super PACs having on this election? It's sort of going to be the first, certainly presidential one that we see. I know that President Obama certainly was sharply critical of the decision in last year, but the Democrats seem to have settled in and are beginning to develop their own super PACs. How do you see politics shaping up now with all this money flooding in with this new avenue?
Yeah, you know, it's a great question. I don't really know the answer yet. You know, it'll have to be seen what happens in this race and whether the countervailing Democratic super PAC sort of cancel out the effect of the conservative ones. It also ought to be kept in mind that Ron Paul, his campaign spent millions to trash Gingrich in Iowa. It wasn't just Romney and the super PAC. So it's hard for me to, you know, untangle which of those ads were, you know, most devastatingly effective, but it's clear that all of them together helped knock Gingrich off his leading perch. My guess is that the super PACs will play an important role, but that money would have found its way into politics anyway. We'd still have the negative ads coming, whether it's the Swift Boat ads coming through super PACs or through campaigns. I think would have, one way or the other, you know, the candidates will find a way to fund negative advertising. So I thought the Supreme Court decision was terrible. I agree with the president on that, but it is what it is. And I'm not sure that this is a game-changing development. It's worrisome because you can't trace the money. as you can with regular spending by candidates' campaigns. But other than that, I'm not sure it's, you know, all that different from what would happen in the absence of super PACs.
Mike?
So long as there's a countervailing campaign from these super PACs, as Will's really suggesting, that the president's campaign will be able to counter super PAC spending from the Republican side. So, and that was the case. I mean, I think it strikes me that Gingrich's campaign was unable to do that because it lacked both the time and the funding, I think, to counter both Ron Paul's attacks and the attacks from Romney's super PAC.
It was also the other thing that seems to it's been a factor, and it's sort of interesting. We had the Tea Party movement that came out of the 2010 elections. I saw one poll which said those who were Iowa supporters, I guess, there were 30% for Santorum, 17% for Gingrich, and 16% for Paul, in terms of people who identified themselves as Tea Party folks. What kind of impact do you see the Tea Party having on this particular election? Will?
Well, I think the big losers, I wrote this week, in Iowa with the Tea Party. As Michael said, you know, they seem to be the dominant ascendant force in the Republican Party after the great successes of 2010, the midterm election. And they were humbling incumbents and forcing all the Republicans to dance to their tune. But clearly, you know, Romney's victory isn't—he's their least favorite candidate, and so it has to be said that they've lost influence. And Michael made an important point earlier about moderates and the Republican campaigns. I'd like to go back to. You know, remember, John McCain was nobody's idea of an arch conservative either back in 2008. Mm-hmm. For all the influence of social and economic conservatives in the Republican nominating primaries, in the end, you know, Republican voters are as tactical as anybody else, meaning that they care about winning. And they don't like Barack Obama. They want to beat him. And so I think a lot of them are inclined to say, you know, who's the candidate that's going to help me achieve that goal? That's a more important question to me than which one is closest to me politically or ideologically. So I think that a combination of the crowded field, which has split the conservative ranks, and tactical voting by Republicans who are susceptible to the electability argument has kind of diminished the Tea Party's influence.
I'm just wondering, from a policy standpoint, that it may not have had an impact. I mean, if you take a look at, for instance, Romney. Romney is obviously disavowed, at least on a national level, the mandate and the health care plan that was involved in his governorship in Massachusetts. He now supports a balanced budget amendment, 20% spending cap. I mean, even though he's the front runner and he's not the favorite of the Tea Party, he seems to be adhering, at least in terms of major policy outlines, some of what they want, so that they may not be able to get their candidate, but at the same time, they're having an impact. What do you think, Will?
Well, I think that's right, obviously, and that happens in every primary system. I mean, I remember Barack Obama in Iowa in 2008 sounded a lot more liberal than he's governed. So all candidates will make accommodations, and boy, has Mitt Romney been willing to make accommodations. But everybody, I think, suspects that it's, you know, not very deeply felt, and that he will pivot back to the center when he, you know, to enhance his crossover appeal against Barack Obama.
Yeah, and there's the pickle I think Romney finds himself in at that point. Assuming he gets the nomination, he has to both pivot on the one hand for a general election towards independent voters and therefore towards more moderate positions. Yet on the other hand, he has to try to consolidate the base of the Republican Party and therefore appeal somehow in a continuous way to the Tea Party folks. And whether or not they're going to be inviting him to that party is a key dimension or a part of the dynamic at the end of this primary race.
Do you think that if Romney becomes a nominee, which looks likely, do you think that there will be just simply not much enthusiasm for him, and that conservatives will, you know, a lot of them will certainly, and the Tea Party folks will turn out, but not the kind of enthusiasm, for instance, that one might have expected, and that very well may give Obama the edge? Mike?
Yeah, no, I think that's a key question and key challenge for the Romney campaign. And I think McCain faced a similar problem, but I think Romney is in even more serious trouble than McCain in this respect, because Romney, again, this goes back to his character. He is a wooden candidate by all perspectives. He doesn't seem to exude any passion, and that's what he has to gin up in order to appeal to these conservative voters. And I suspect we will see that the turnout among the more conservative ranks is going to be lower than it might be otherwise in the fall.
What about that, Will? You think that's...
Yeah, I agree. I think, you know, that's where the Tea Party could get its revenge, you know, low turnout, low enthusiasm. He kind of reminds me, Romney does, of Tom Dewey, you know, the man on the wedding cake. A little too perfect, all his hair is in place, looks great, and kind of just, you know, doesn't move or stir any deep passions on the Republican side. And I think it's a crippling liability. Yeah. Really, Romney is the candidate for a country that's just really mad about the weak economy and feels that Barack Obama doesn't know how to fix it. And that's the only reason he can be out in front in this race, that and the fact that he has a ton of money. So I think he'll suffer an enthusiasm gap, but, you know, on the Democratic side, there's also worry that the kind of high passion that Barack Obama aroused among key voting groups, the young, minorities, others in 2008, will also, there'll be some drop-off there as well.
Well, I'd like. What's your sense about Obama's appeal to independent voters, if under the present dynamics?
Well, this is the $64 question. You know, the independents. He won independents by 8 points in 2008. Mm-hmm. They defected in 2010, and that's why Republicans had their big sweeping victory there. And so he's got to win a substantial amount of them back, and probably, you know, something like a low majority of them. And they are concerned about the economy, very concerned about deficits, and not sure they trust either party to do anything serious about them. They're very angry about the polarization and partisanship in Washington as well. So they're the wild card. He's got to win them back in order to hold his seat. And in a sense, you know, that's the other advantage, I guess I should have mentioned, of Romney, is that he has at least on paper crossover appeal, because, mm-hmm. you know, he's more moderate and he's got this reputation of being somebody who understands how the private economy works, which is a big blind spot for Barack Obama and the Democrats.
One of the things that strikes me, particularly about this election, this primary process, is the idea that we've seen sort of from through these candidates, sort of a splintering, as it were, of the various components of the Republican Party. I mean, we have the Ron Paul group, which is basically libertarian. Rick Santorum, he really represents social conservatives, evangelicals. Folks like, say, for instance, Romney represent maybe perhaps more the business wing. And the party does not seem to know exactly, I don't know what to say, who it is, but it certainly is trying to figure out where it's going. What do you think about that? Well, have we seen a splintering that could go on for some time?
Well, yeah, that's an interesting point, because the one group you didn't mention is sort of the mainstay of the modern Republican coalition, which is white working class voters. Non-college white workers have been strongly Republican, and they were in 2010. The deficit with Democrats widened even more. And so the question is, who, you know, speaks to those voters best? Rick Santorum would like to. He has a sort of a blue collar background. He's from Pennsylvania, but he has a problem in that he's you know, as we've just learned, he's gotten rich over the last year doing K Street lobbying, which doesn't exactly, you know, put him in the 99%. So that's an important constituency that is there to be rallied, and the question, you know, and Romney doesn't, you know, really speak to those voters very powerfully. He's part of the 1%. Santorum, at least on paper, is supposed to have appeal with them, but we'll see what happens.
Mike?
Yeah, I'm not sure if I have much to add, except that's going to be an important constituency for sure. And again, depending upon what happens with the perception of the economy, that's the appeal that Romney could make to them. If the economy continues to be perceived as going the wrong way, otherwise that could be taken away from Romney.
One of the things that also struck me as this debate goes on within the Republican Party is that I'm wondering whether or not the Republican brand isn't being damaged somewhat, at least in the eyes of some folks. I mean, we had a whole discussion now, at least some references to the African-American community. A headline just the other day about Gingrich, African-American community should demand paychecks and not be satisfied with food stamps. Santorum certainly got himself caught up in racial issues. We've seen some fairly socially extreme, to some people anyway, positions taken, gay marriage and so on. Will, what do you make of that? I mean, is the Republican Party going to be somewhat tarnished by this discussion, even though the social conservatives may not even make up the majority of the party?
Well, I think so. Look, there was, a great moment of exuberance after 2010 when the Tea Party-infused Republicans were, spent much of the year trying to shut government down or, withholding their votes from the debt ceiling increase, which would have plunged America into default. Fairly radical positions, that in the end we didn't get much deficit reduction, but we got a lot of a lot of friction and a lot of polarization in Washington, which has frustrated voters, particularly independents and moderates. So I think that the what I would call the extremism of the Republican coalition has been on display all year in these deficit fights in Washington, and particularly in this Republican nominating battle in Iowa. Some really crazy stuff has come out of that race, from my point of view, on foreign policy and domestic policy. People want to go back in their economic thinking, Ron Paul, to get rid of the Federal Reserve and, go on the gold standard. And this stuff is 100 years old. And so I think that the Republicans have given full rein to their kind of inner ids, and that's kind of scared a lot of moderate and independent voters off. And if the economy is the Republicans' trump card in this 2012 election, I think that this reputation for ideological stridency and extremism could be Obama's trump card.
We've been speaking with Will Marshall. He is president of the Progressive Policy Institute based in Washington, D.C. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Also, Salisbury University professor Michael Laughlin, who is, of course, a political science professor at Salisbury University. And we've been talking about the latest developments in the Republican presidential primary race. And we appreciate you all for listening. You've been listening to Delmarva Today. I'm Don Rush.
This has been Delmarva Today, a production of Delmarva Public Radio. Chris Rank produces and is our audio engineer. Our volunteer producers are Penny Hartman, Kathleen Grout, and Jim White. Don Rush is your host. For podcasts, visit our website, delmarvapublicradio.net, or subscribe to the Delmarva Today podcast in iTunes. Delmarva Today can now be seen on PAC-14. To view the schedule, visit the Daily Times or visit PAC14.org.